12. The rest of the wizards were taking a break when Jeff and Roy materialized in the clearing next to the cage dome. There had been 7 dragons in the cage before. Now there were 2. The weapons team needed to try out their prototypes on something, and creating new dragons would be far too dangerous, so Jeff's original 7 got the job. Jeff and Roy looked at the 2 remaining dragons, then at the wizards, sitting and lying in the grass, not talking. A new structure sat next to Jeff's original dragon pen, a large rectangular cage, about 1/4 of the size of the original dome, and a caged path large enough for a dragon led from the one cage to the other. A large stone wall blocked the dragons in the domed cage from seeing what happened in the smaller cage. Roy said,
"Simple math tells me that you've been productive."
"We've learned a lot," Philip said.
"Yes,"
Martin agreed, lying on his back, staring at the sky.
"For instance, I've learned that testing weapons on caged animals makes me feel like a monster. Even when I know the animals aren't real, and they look like death with wings."
Britt said,
"Hear, hear."
Jeff looked at the ground and said,
"Sorry."
"Still, it looks like you came up with something."
"We came up with many things," Gwen said.
"Not all of them worked the way we'd hoped."
Tyler stood and walked toward the domed cage. Jeff said,
"Anxious to show us what you've got, eh?"
"Not in the slightest," Tyler said. "But there are some things you don't want to deal with, but you just have to grit your teeth and get through it."
Roy asked,
"Learned that from working on ranches, did you?"
"No, from growing up as a black man in Butte, Montana."
"Hey, Gary, help me out here."
Gary shrugged, hoisted himself up off the ground, and followed Tyler. The 2 wizards climbed through the fence, then managed, through a combination of running and shouting, to maneuver one of the dragons into the chute. Gary and Tyler followed, and the cage section which acted as a door rematerialized behind them. The rest of the wizards moved behind the wall to the 2nd, smaller cage. Martin said,
"Force fields don't work on the dragons, neither do missiles, direct physical force, or sarcasm. We tried Gwen's macro with the fabric that entangled the dragons, and Gary's stupid spider webs. But without you there, Jeff, to deactivate the dragons when you think they've lost, the dragons just tore right through them. Same goes for Britt's asphyxiation bubble. So we had to invent some new stuff."
"All right," Tyler said. "Shall we start with the ray?"
Gary nodded. Tyler pointed the chrome hood ornament on the head of his staff at one of the 2 dragons and said,
"Radeon Draco Unu."
A white bolt of light shot from Tyler's staff and hit the closest dragon in the hindquarters. The beam faded and disappeared, as did a portion of the dragon. A small portion, the specific part the beam had hit, a triangular chunk of the beast's rear flank. The rest of the dragon remained perfectly intact. The spot where the triangle had been was now an open hole, revealing the inside of the dragon to be an empty void, as if the dragon was a statue made of sheets of plywood. The dragon showed no pain, or even any sign that it had noticed a problem. Philip said,
"As you can see, our first attempt at an anti-dragon ray didn't destroy the dragon, but only demonstrated that they are hollow, which is a nice metaphor for life's problems, but isn't particularly useful beyond that. Our theory is that the dragons are made up of polygons, and that each polygon, for whatever reason, is treated as a separate object. Then we took the obvious next step. We widened the beam and deleted more of the dragon by hitting more polygons."
Tyler nodded at Philip, then said,
"Radeon Draco Du."
Instead of a thin beam, a cone of light shot from the head of Tyler's staff, bathing half of the dragon in its harsh white glare. When the beam dissipated, half of the dragon had vanished. The remaining half was a hollow shell, like half of a broken chocolate bunny, only much larger and dragon-shaped. Instead of falling over, the half-dragon remained suspended in air, as if the rest of the dragon was still there, just invisible. Philip said,
"So you see, it doesn't kill the dragon. It merely renders parts of it invisible. Bathing an entire dragon in the ray wouldn't destroy it. It would only make it more dangerous."
They somehow have access to the instincts and intelligence of an animal, Britt explained. But they still have the body of a video game character. When you damage that body, instead of killing it, it glitches out.
Gary pointed at the flailing half-dragon and asked,
Are we done with this one?
Philip said,
Yes.
Martin said, I'll go get the last dragon, and jogged toward the original holding pen. Gary said,
Cray duono ringego,
then tilted his head back and shouted,
Goal!
At the end of the rectangular pen, a metal arch, easily 30 feet tall and 60 feet across, appeared. A thin, iridescent blue membrane, like soap film, stretched across its inner circumference. Tyler and Gary spent several minutes chasing and dodging and harassing the half-dragon until it tried to escape by running through the arch into the blue membrane. Its leg and wing continued to move under their own power, right up until the second they disappeared. Tyler said,
Forigi duono ringego go!
The arch disappeared. Then, as if on cue, the final dragon ran into the ring, slid to a stop, and breathed fire at Gary and Tyler, both of whom yelped and hastily created force fields to keep the fire at bay. Martin ran in behind the dragon, then made a hard right and squeezed through the fence to rejoin the group. Britt said,
We got to thinking that if it has the instincts of an animal, maybe we should try to kill it the way we'd kill an animal, instead of trying to delete it like a computer-generated character.
Gentlemen? Gary and Tyler nodded at Britt, turned to each other, and Tyler said,
It was your idea. You do the honors.
Gary smiled, thanked him, and then ran around so that he faced the dragon head on.
I got the idea from a kung fu movie I once saw.
Gary hunkered down a bit, extended his left arm to his side, and curled his right arm inward, as if he intended to throw a frisbee. He said,
Cray flying guillotine!
A ring about a foot in diameter appeared in his right hand. He threw the ring toward the dragon's head. It flew gracefully, growing in midair as it went. A thin line of glowing energy extended from the ring back to Gary's hand as it went. The ring dropped over the dragon's head and slid down its neck, resting at its shoulder blades. Gary hauled back with his hand, as if pulling on the glowing line that tethered him to the ring. The glowing ring became a glowing disc, then disappeared as the dragon's head and neck fell away from its body. The head thrashed and lolled on the ground for several seconds. Then it continued for several more seconds. When nearly 30 seconds had passed with the head and severed neck still thrashing around, Roy said,
This isn't gonna stop, is it?
No,
Philip said. The dragon's body continued to stand around, fidgeting in a bored sort of manner, with a large hole where its head used to be. The body took a small step forward and accidentally kicked the head, which breathed a plume of fire at its own former body. The fire washed over the body's legs and belly without it seeming to notice at all. Philip shouted,
All right, they get the idea.
Tyler shouted,
Cray duono ringego goal!
The arch with a semi-transparent blue membrane reappeared. Gary grabbed the head and neck and held it close to his body, as if hugging it. The head swung wildly, like the nozzle of a fire hose at full pressure, shooting a steady stream of fire in every direction as Gary walked the head over to the arch to dispose of it. Then he and Tyler both shoved the headless body through the arch, like sumo wrestlers ganging up on a confused elephant. When they had finished, Tyler made the arch vanish, and he and Gary stood with their hands on their knees, breathing heavily. When he'd finally caught his breath, Gary said,
Way to go, man! High five!
He held his hand up, waiting for Tyler to slap it. Tyler looked at Gary's hand like it was plutonium.
Come on, man, high five!
Never.
Man, don't leave me hanging.
Tyler said,
I will always leave you hanging.
Outside the pen, Jeff closed his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose.
So you haven't come up with any weapon that's effective against my dragons.
They're not really your dragons anymore, Martin said.
They belong to the world now.
Please, don't remind me.
Philip said,
We came up with an effective weapon. It works like a charm.
Then why didn't you show us that?
Roy asked.
We did. You've been looking right at it. We call it the goal. That glowy blue arch thingy? It destroys the dragons instantly and completely. We figure we can just trick the dragons into going through it, and that's that. We came up with the other stuff we showed you while trying to think of an alternative to using the goal.
Jeff asked. Why would you want an alternative?
Because, like any really good weapon, it's nearly as dangerous to us as it is to the dragons. The goal utterly destroys anything that goes through it by automatically isolating and deleting its entry, and only its entry in the repository file. Really, the arch and the blue glow are just markers. The macro that creates them monitors a circular plane in space, then identifies and deletes the data of that specific instance of any object, but doesn't delete or alter the object's global codebase. It cleanly eradicates anything that passes through, including us.
Jeff said, "So if a dragon pulls us in with it, or if we fall through it on our own," Britt added.
"Or just aren't watching where we're going and walk into it," Gwen continued.
"We'd be irrevocably dead,"
Philip finished. Roy nodded.
"I see why you used this delivery method. A ray would be more convenient, but if you miss, it'd be a disaster. Can't we put a force field up in front of the goal? Dragons go right through them, but they stop us."
"Yeah," Martin said. "That's the first thing we did."
"Oh," Roy said. "Good. And does it work?"
"Should."
"What do you mean, should? Haven't you tested it?"
"How would you test it? We threw rocks and sticks at it, but that only proved it works for rocks and sticks. There's no reason it shouldn't work, but that doesn't mean that it does. You know the safety on a gun should work, but would you test it by putting the gun to your head and pulling on the trigger as hard as you can?"
Philip said,
"The only way to be sure that it works for us would be for one of us to walk into it. We believe it would work, but if it doesn't, the person testing it is dead. The only sensible course of action is to assume that it works and do everything in our power to keep from ever finding out for sure."
Britt said,
"Don't trust and never verify."
Roy said,
"That doesn't fill me with confidence."
Gwen said,
"It's not supposed to."
"Quite the opposite, in fact," Philip added. "So that's what we've come up with? How about you two?"
Roy said,
"We've got some good news there. We were able to take the file entries for the dragons Jeff made and isolate certain chunks of code that are common to all of the randomly occurring dragons. Then we did a global search of the file, and we came up with a snapshot of the rough location of all dragons, as of the moment we ran those ones out of Leadchurch."
Gwen asked,
"And are there more?"
"Yes, but it could have been worse,"
Roy said.
"Jeff used the entry of a sheep as his template. It seems that anywhere that breed of sheep lives, there was a small statistical probability of generating dragons, some of which, unfortunately, are rams. Luckily, he accidentally used a sheep from a rare breed that's only in the British Isles."
Jeff produced a small tablet computer from his robe pocket, tapped at it a few times, and turned it so the rest of the wizards could see.
"This," Jeff said, "is the mess I've made. It's a heat map of the dragon population as of the moment we left town."
The screen showed a map of England, Ireland, Scotland, and a bit of the west coast of Europe. Dark red blobs represented places where dragons had appeared. The bad news was that there were 5 blobs, all fairly distant from each other. The good news was that there were only 5 blobs, including Leadchurch. Also, those blobs were all on the island that contained England, Scotland, and Wales. None of the dragons had spawned anywhere else, and they had not managed to fly across the channel or to Ireland. Roy said,
"Jeff and I figure we can split up into 4 teams of 2, the good old buddy system. Leadchurch had the largest group, including Jeff's original 7, all of which have now been destroyed. That leaves the 4 dragons we chased off and 3 strays.
Jeff and I'll take care of them, then move on to London, where there appear to be 5 dragons on the outskirts of town. There's a flock of 8 in Yorkshire, 4 and 2 loners in Wales, and a big party of 10 up in Scotland.
Jeff said, once a team has dealt with their dragons, they'll just check to see who's still working and go help. Any questions?
Britt said, yeah. Do we have any idea how far these things can fly? Could they make it to Ireland or France?
Roy said,
we don't know, but I don't see any reason to assume they couldn't. That's just more reason to eradicate them as quickly as possible. Any more questions?
Nobody said anything, but Jeff raised his hand.
I was asking if any of them had a question for us.
Roy explained. Yeah, and they don't, Jeff said. So now I have a question for them.
What is it, Jeff?
Philip asked. Are you going to banish me? Philip said,
I'm sorry, what?
Jeff asked again. Are you going to banish me? Philip and the other wizards all looked at each other for a moment. Then Philip said,
we really haven't discussed it, Jeff. You're the first person to bring it up. I suppose now that you have, we'll have to put it to a vote. I can't speak for everyone, but I can tell you that I would vote against it. Why are you asking us this?
Jeff said, I just want to know where I stand. I can't believe the idea hadn't occurred to any of you. I'd be tempted to banish me after what I've done.
Gwen said, you made a mistake, Jeff. Everybody makes mistakes. We don't banish people for it.
Jeff said, I'm pretty sure all of 3 of the people we've banished would claim that we did it because they made mistakes. Tyler said,
Jimmy tried to kill us all and didn't finish the job. That's a way bigger mistake than the one you made. And Todd showed us that he enjoyed torturing people,
Philip said.
That's a massive character flaw, not a mistake.
Jeff said, what about that wizard from Paris? Mitchell. We banished him, and he didn't kill anybody. He didn't even hurt anyone.
Mitchell,
Philip said,
was a pathological liar. We all tried to ignore it, but it just got worse and worse. Eventually, we just humored him. Even Jimmy. You remember what that was like. He'd tell you to your face that he'd done things you knew he hadn't, and all you could do was accept it and leave as fast as you could. We had to send him away.
And we didn't really banish him,
Gwen said.
I mean, we banished him, but we didn't banish him. We sent him back to his time with a long, healthy lifespan and $100 million, and told him that if he ever touched his file entry, we'd take it all away and do something worse.
How's he doing? Tyler asked. Philip said,
last time we checked on him, he was running for mayor.